have your Bibles, would you open to Genesis chapter 32? If you don't have your Bibles, it'll be up on the screen, and you can read it. In our living room at home, if I can just get your attention for a second, in our living room at home, we have two end tables, one by Mary Lou's recliner, one by my recliner. Those end tables are probably older than most of you in this room. They're in dire need of restoration. Yeah. My sister-in-law says, "How aren't we all?" Now, if I guarantee you, if I took those tables and tried to refinish them by myself to restore them, it would be a disaster. I know nothing about it. I would mess it up. I would make them worse than they are now. However, you put those tables in the hands of a master craftsman, he can restore them just like they're new. So, I want you to become the table for a second, okay? Become the table for a second. What kind of things made its mark over the years on that table? What do you think? Spills, glasses, condensation from the glasses. What else? My forks, knives, age. I didn't mean to point out you, Nora, but you said it. Age, scratch it, kids. Whether it was yours or your grandkids, you know, anything, you know, the age brings scars, doesn't it? Time brings scars. Time, you know, everything erodes over time, doesn't it? But you put something like that into the hands of a master carpenter, a master craftsman, they can make it look like new again. Isn't that right? However, it doesn't happen overnight. It's a lot of work. Not that I know what I'm doing. I'm relying on what Angelo tells me because, you know, he knows about this stuff. It's a lot of work. It's time consuming, takes a lot of muscle and a lot of effort. Well, I want to suggest this morning that you and I are no different from the table. That over the years, we get scarred. We get marked. We get broken, right? We start to fade. But I want you to follow this with me. Our problems generally aren't cosmetic, but inside. What are some of the things that can mark us inside? Well, sin. You know, we make sinful choices sometimes, and that leaves scars, doesn't it? And that's from our own bad choices. What else can mark us? Say again? Grief. We lose somebody we love, right? We lose a job after many years. You know, those things, they leave marks. What are some other things? Abuse. Big one. A big one. You know, physical abuse, sexual abuse, alcohol abuse, drug abuse. I mean, we can go on. What other things leave marks? Surgery, somebody said. Yeah. Well, I will not take that lightly. Let's say somebody had radical surgery. That's an emotional thing, isn't it? Lack of love, disappointment. These are all things that mar us, if I can put it that way. Remember the iceberg illustration I used last week? 10% above the water, you see, then the other 90%, which really does all the damage, you don't see. Well, it's that 90% that we manage to hide and mask that other people don't see. That's where all the marring is. That's where all the scars are and all of that. And I want to suggest to you this morning that the only way those things can be healed is if we let God in that 90%. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's one of the bad things about living in our culture. We want instant fixes. And God doesn't work that way, although he works. And overnight, we don't see those improvements coming many times, but over a period of years. And here's where I want you to remember the end table analogy. My guess is, and Angela, you can correct me if I'm wrong. My guess is if I gave those tables into the hands of the master craftsman, it would probably take a week for the whole process, maybe longer, depending on, you know, how much stuff is what underneath everything, right? Week or longer. In my mind, I want them tomorrow, right? Fix them. I want them fixed right away. And he probably could do it, but it wouldn't last. But to have something that would last takes time and effort. God does the same thing with us, but over a period of time, as we let him. And God can work in our lives to bring healing to those scars, to bring wholeness back, so that we don't have to live double lives anymore. We're good at that, aren't we? We can live double lives. We can look good to other people and yet be screaming on the inside from all the scars and the hurts. But God doesn't want that for our lives. He wants us to be the same privately as we are in public, but be the same in wholeness with him and healing. We catch a glimpse of that with Jacob. Before we start this chapter, I want to just set the backstory here. Jacob is now more than 20 years into his journey. This didn't happen overnight. Jacob God had to work inside of Jacob to transform him from a schemer who trusted his own sight rather than live by God's promises and faith. He had to transform him from a prideful man. He had to transform him from a man who had a huge ego into someone who was going to lovingly obey him from the inside out, but there had to be healing that takes place in order to do that. So allow me to bring you through part of this journey. If you have your Bibles, look at verse 1 of chapter 32. I'm going to bring you through this as quickly as I can. Says Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, "This is the camp of God." He named the place Mahanaim. Now, this is important. I don't want to skip this. Jacob has made some progress here, but God knew that there still needed to be change, internal change happening. And I want you to understand that in this, God is the master craftsman. He's the only one that can bring about real change. And so God in his grace gives to Jacob a divine encounter. I'm almost afraid to ask this. And you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. How many of you believe you've had divine encounters? I have. Okay. We may not want to publicize that for some strange reason. I don't know. I realize that some of these can be highly personal, but God is still in the business of bringing divine encounters, okay? If you're here today, that's a divine encounter, not with me, but with God. You're not here by accident, and I'll go as far as to say this, even if you don't want to be here today, you're here for a reason, okay? A divine encounter, they come in many ways, many times. What I'm afraid of is in our own lives, we get too busy and we get caught up in our own circumstances and our own stuff. Sometimes we miss divine encounters. Now, don't go out of here and take this the wrong way, because if you think you had a divine encounter that God told you to go rob Wawa, that's not the case. God will never, ever reveal anything that's contrary to his word. All right? You understand that. Right, so God keeps giving Jacob these divine encounters as we go along. If you ever do a timeline like we talked about last week of your life, you can pinpoint some very important divine encounters you may have had with God. This is only a prelude to what's coming. Go ahead, Joe. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Sire, the country of Edom. He instructed them, this is what you are to say to my lord Esau. Your servant Jacob says, I have been staying with Laban and have remained there till now. Now, you remember this. At this point, Jacob knows he was told by God to go where? Go home. Go back to your people. And he knows who's going to be there. His brother, his older twin brother, who he what? Deceived and swindled. Isn't it strange when I asked what marks up our lives? We didn't say broken relationships. But they do, don't they? In this case, it was Jacob who was the deceiver, the offender. And Jacob is kind of afraid for his life. We know that. But he makes the attempt now to reach out to Esau. Keep going, Joe. He says, I have cattle and donkeys, sheep and goats, male and female servants. Now I am sending this message to my Lord that I may find favor in your eyes. Excuse me. Now you may say, you know, Jacob's trying to buy Esau's favor. This was a custom back then to say, you didn't go anywhere without gifts. Okay? Especially in a situation like this where you're trying to reconcile. I can only speak as somebody growing up in an Italian home. Anytime you went to visit someone, you always brought something. Right? Here's a, you know, in our case, it was rum cake, you know, or something like that. I didn't like it. I don't know why they brought it, but, you know, bring rum cake. He didn't come empty-handed to somebody's home. Jacob is going back into Esau's home, and he's saying, I want to bring gifts. I want you to know this is not a hostile meeting. Okay? Keep going, Joe. When the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, we went to your brother Esau, and now he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. What do you think Jacob's thinking? I would. He's coming for me. He's going to pay me back. Any of you who have brothers or sisters, you know what that's like. You did them wrong, they're going to get you. You know, they're going to get you. Go ahead, Joe. Look at verse 7. In great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, and the flocks and the herds as well as the camels. He thought, if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape. Kind of a strategic, you know, plan to say, I could be in real trouble here. I don't know what's going on. But I want you to know at this point, in all fairness to Jacob, if it were me, I might have turned around. But Jacob said, no, I need to push through. God told me to go back home. And God just gave me a divine encounter to say, come on, let's go, Jacob. Keep going, Joe. It says, then Jacob prayed. He finally has the good sense to pray. All right? Because God's been doing a work inside now. O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, Lord, you said to me, I love that. Isn't it great when we come back to the Lord and say, Lord, you made a promise to me. And Lord, I want to stand on that promise by faith. Lord, help me. He says, you're the one who said, go back to your country and your relatives, and I will make you prosper. Go ahead, John. I am unworthy of all your kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. This is kind of like the first time you hear these words in the life of Jacob. I'm unworthy. I'm unworthy. Lord, I can't trust my scheming anymore because when I scheme, I don't walk by faith. Lord, I can't trust my own power anymore because my own power is not sufficient anymore. Lord, I'm not worthy of all the kindness and blessings you've shown me. All that you have been faithful with me, even, Lord, when I was not walking the right way. It says, I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two camps. Keep going, Joe. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. So what's Esau doing? He says, Lord, this is scary. Have you ever been scared by doing the right thing? I have. But Lord, what Jacob is doing is recounting the promises of God, saying, I'm not doing this blindly. I'm doing this based on your promise, Lord. Because you see, Lord, if Esau takes me out, there's not going to be any Israel. There's not going to be any people because the promise stops with me. So Lord, help me. Save me. Keep going, Joe. He spent the night there from what he had with him and selected a gift for his brother. More gifts. 200 female goats and 20 male goats. 200 ewes and 20 rams. 30 female camels with their young. 40 cows. 10 bulls. 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. If I could put that in modern terms, that would be a Jaguar, Mercedes. This is wealth. You know, this is wealth. He put them in the care of his servants, each herd by itself, and said to his servants, go ahead of me, keep some space between the herds. He instructed the one in the lead, my brother Esau meets when my brother Esau meets you and asks, who do you belong to and who are you, where are you going and who owns all these animals in front of you? Then you are to say they belong to your servant Jacob. Notice the wording. Your servant Jacob. In the proclamation that God made to Sarah and Abraham was that the younger was going to serve the older. You remember that? No, the younger was going to serve the older. You're right. It was the other way around. But in this case, Jacob is saying, no, I'm your servant. Jacob finally got it as God is working in his life that to be a leader, you have to be a servant. We don't like that. You know, we think of leaders, you know, in powerful positions. We think of leaders having people serve them, right? Isn't that true? I can't imagine what Trump's entourage might be, okay? I can't imagine the entourage in some of the political figures, you know, what they have. But true leadership means you're willing to take up the wash towel in the basin and wash the feet of others. And so Jacob's coming with a humble spirit now instead of a scheming and conniving spirit. And he says, they are a gift sent to my Lord Esau, and he is coming behind us. Go on, Joe. He also instructed the second and the third of all the others who follow the herd, you are to say the same thing to Esau when you meet him. And be sure to say, your servant Jacob is coming behind us. For he thought, I will pacify him with these gifts, and I am sending ahead. Later, when I see him, perhaps he will receive me. So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp. This was the most crucial night Jacob will ever spend, because God knew that there was still more work to be done in his life. God knows there's still more work to be done in my life and in your life. The question is, will we let him? And so, here we go. Go ahead, Joe. That night, Jacob got up, took two of his wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed the ford Jabbok, is the river's name. After he had sent them over across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until daybreak. Have you ever wrestled with God? And usually in those times where we wrestle with God over some issues or issues that in which he's dealing in our lives, we do that alone. We really do that alone. He says, when the man saw that he could not overpower him. Now, this boggles my mind. We know from the narrative that Jacob is wrestling with God, and we say the man could not overpower him. I don't quite understand that. But I know it's true because it's here. Doesn't mean God was weak. I'm not sure exactly what it means, but here's what God did. He touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, let me go before it's daybreak. And Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you what? Oof. I wish I could tell you I understand that whole encounter. I don't understand everything there, but I do understand this. This is the point where Jacob's pride was finally broken. I don't know if you've ever had the humbling experience, excuse me, of breaking a bone. Several years back, I broke my arm in three places. My left arm, I'm right-handed, I broke my left arm. And I'm figuring, you know, as they're putting in the sling and all of this stuff, it's no big deal. You know, I still have my right hand. Let me tell you, I didn't know how much I missed my left hand. The simplest things became a problem. I couldn't get a pair of pants on. You know, you don't think about those things, right? I couldn't get a pair of pants on with, you know, with just one hand. Showering was hard. You know, all these things you take for granted get to be hard. And when I finally healed, it made me appreciate I was back to normal again, whatever that is. In this case, Jacob came out better for his injury. And I did too. To be very honest with you, I was out of commission for a while, and God knew I need to be out of commission for a while. Thanks. And appreciate it. And so, even in those times where, you know, we walk with a limp, if I could put it that way, God has reasons. Excuse me one second. Here's the thing. Jacob had enough sense to know who he was wrestling with. And he had enough sense in this wrestling match, which wrestled to dawn, to say, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. That says a couple of things to me. That says to me, maybe to you, that my prayer life tends to be anemic. Because most of my wrestling is done with God in prayer. And there are some times I just don't feel like praying. Have you been there? Right. So I heard somebody say one time that the pastor has the easiest life. He works one day a week. And if he gets up in the morning and it's raining, he pulls the covers over his head. And all he has to do is say one prayer and he's done for the day. This is true. All right. But prayer should be wrestling with God in some sense. And when I don't feel like praying, I need to continue to pray until God gives me a blessing. And I say that to you to say, don't give up. You pray, you wrestle with God, and don't let him go until he gives you a blessing. And he will. The problem is, will we let him, and we will give him the time to do that? This case, it took all night. Okay, Joe, keep going. The man asked, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. The man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but what? Israel. You know what the name Israel means in Hebrew? Striving with God. It's exactly what it means. Because you have struggled with God, with humans, and have overcome. Okay, Joe? Jacob said, keep going. Oh, please tell me your name. He reversed it now, right? Jacob is saying to God, please tell me your name. But he replied, why do you ask my name? Then he blessed them there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was what? Spared. I don't quite understand that either. But I know it happened. The sun rose above him as he was in Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. That limp never went away. It was a reminder to Jacob of God's grace, reminder that his God wanted what was best for him, and that was to work in his life from the inside out, to break the pride, the arrogance, the scheming, that 90% that's below the surface, and to transform him and bring healing, because one of the healings that Jacob needed was a reconciliation with the brother he had wronged. The limp was a good thing. In seminary years ago, the dean of the seminary was doing a lot of work on the computer for the accreditation of the seminary. And we had him for a class in the Gospels. So he came into class one morning. He wore very thick glasses. They were glass lenses back then, right? And we noticed that in the left lens, it was all shattered. Now, we went through class, and right after that class, we happened to have lunch, the students. And we felt bad. We know professors in the seminary do not make a whole lot of money. And we thought maybe he didn't get the glasses fixed because he didn't have money. So we said, let's see what happens next week. So when we come to class next week, still has the glass shattered. So a group of us got together and we said, can we come up with $500-$600 so he can get new glasses? We did. And we asked him to join us for lunch. There were 14 of us. And we asked him to join us for lunch. And he sure said, I'd be happy to join you for lunch. And we said, Dr. Mignard was his name. We noticed that your glasses are broken. And we know that professors don't make a whole lot of money. We'd like to chip in and buy you a new pair. And he started to get emotional. He said, boys, I have the money, but I need a reminder of how arrogant and angry I became when the computer crashed and I lost all the information, all the months and hours of work. He said, I became angry at God, and I smashed my glasses on the desk. And he says, God has to do a work within me to get rid of that anger, and I will not let these glasses go until I feel his blessing. It was 4 months later when he finally got new glasses, and he said, everything's good. So God knew what he was doing. Verse 32, therefore, to this day the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. End of chapter, John, right? I have to ask this morning, do we need a master carpenter, master craftsman, to start working in our lives? I would guess for every one of us in this room, there's some stuff and scars that have taken its toll over the years that we need to let God in on and start to do his work and give him permission to start doing his work, because a lot of times it's not going to happen overnight. But I'm going to ask you to be like Jacob. Don't give up on God. He's not giving up on you. There's a video that I saw, and I meant to bring it in today. I just ran out of time and energy, to be honest with you, yesterday. But it showed a old beat up canoe. Now, if those of you who have rowboats or canoes that were made of wood, you know how chipped and the paint goes and rot sets in and all. And it was really pretty bad. It wasn't even seaworthy in the video I showed. And then a master craftsman, one who works on boats, took it. Took him 3 months to restore. Hard work. I'm not talking about working one day, putting it aside. This was every day, doing a little bit at a time, doing the hard work to restore. And at the end of the video, it showed, looked like new. And it showed the master craftsman in the boat, rowing the boat. And it was an incredible transformation. I say that to let you know that it's never too late. I don't care what the scars are. I don't care what the past. I don't care. There's nothing beyond the master craftsman that he can't heal and bring back wholeness. We trust him with our very salvation, don't we? Why can't we trust him to bring healing to our lives? I'll speak for myself. There's too many years that pass by quickly where I live in needless pain. If I had only turned it over to the master carpenter. The offer is there for all of us. Let's pray.